Good afternoon, Chief Justice Steele, and may it please the court. My name is Bernard O'Donnell. I'm here on behalf of David Brown, who was convicted of two offenses in the Superior Court in Newcastle County: possession with intent to deliver marijuana and maintaining a vehicle for the purpose of possessing or keeping marijuana. There is one issue that we raised in this appeal that is addressed only to one conviction, and that is the maintaining offense. And we contend that based upon the facts below, there was not sufficient evidence to convict the defendant of keeping a vehicle or knowingly keeping or maintaining a vehicle which is resorted to by persons using controlled substances or which is used for keeping or delivering them.
Was your client charged separately from Boswell or tried separately from Boswell?
Boswell wasn't tried, Your Honor. He was not even charged with a controlled substance offense, and I believe his charges may have been resolved in the Court of Common Pleas. He was charged only with a traffic offense, and I believe with hindering prosecution.
He was the one who had over $1,000 in cash.
Yes, sir. But as we pointed out in our brief, that's not illegal, and there was no evidence of any drug activity here other than the mere possession of drugs by our client. The statute says requires that in Priest versus State, a fairly recent decision of the court addressed this issue under the circumstances in Priest. There's oftentimes a continuum of activity which determines whether the defendant is guilty of this offense or not. The continuum is such that clear guilt is established if the defendant, whether he or she is a operator of a vehicle or a passenger of a vehicle, and is knowingly using that vehicle to get to another location to carry out a drug transaction. That the court has reviewed that situation. That situation presents itself a number of times. Another situation is where the defendant, oftentimes a passenger in a vehicle, as in this case, there's no evidence that the defendant has any control or power, says, over the operation of the motor vehicle. There's insufficient evidence that the defendant is maintaining or keeping a vehicle. That's the Priest case. And on that continuum of cases, our case here today is closest to the Priest situation. In fact, it's so close, it's not even close. In Priest, the court stated that Priest's conviction for maintaining a vehicle for keeping controlled substance was reversed on appeal because the state did not, quote, offer evidence of some affirmative activity to utilize the vehicle to facilitate the possession or use of the controlled substance. We submit that in this case, while our client was in possession of a controlled substance and while he was in a motor vehicle, that Priest standard has not been anywhere close to being met.
Can you help me with a hypothetical on whether the standard would be met under this circumstance? Let's say there's three guys, and they say, you carry the cash, you carry the gun, and you carry the drugs. And they sit in different places in the vehicle, and they're going out basically to make deliveries from the window of the car. They hand the cash, and then one hands the drugs, and the other guy's there, but just in case. Would that scenario, if proven, establish a maintaining a vehicle for keeping controlled substances?
Yes, I believe it would, because that scenario is closer to several of the cases on its facts, which the state mentions in their briefing, where there was actually a drug excursion or activity, as in Lonergan, or in Watson or Wheeler, where they were actually in the midst of a drug sale or delivery.
What's the significance of the fact he was charged and convicted of possession with intent to deliver?
I don't believe there's any significance to that, Your Honor, because it was similar circumstances in McNulty versus State. In that case, the persons where the evidence was found insufficient to establish maintaining a vehicle because there wasn't sufficient control over the operation of the vehicle or the direction of its travel, in those cases, there was a delivery coming down, and the vehicle was being used to consummate the delivery. So simply because there is possession with intent to possession with intent to deliver doesn't mean the vehicle was being used at that time for that particular purpose.
Well, but he was convicted at that time of possessing the or having the intent to deliver drugs. What's the meaningful, logical distinction?
Well, the logical distinction is that the vehicle, says, was not being used to, there was no evidence that the vehicle was being used to deliver, says, drugs.
Well, and he's sitting in it with 22 segregated baggies of drugs. And at that time, a jury concluded beyond a reasonable doubt that his intent was to deliver them. And he's in the right front seat of a car. Why is it not logical to extend that? And despite the, I always have thought, perversely vague language, keep or maintain a vehicle, really means vehicle for the purpose of facilitating, possessing, delivering drugs. Why is that not perfectly logical under the facts of this case?
Well, if in that case that the defendant need only have possession with intent to, possession of drugs with the intent to deliver them, and not specific to sometime in the future, and there's no element required that he was keeping or using the vehicle to deliver the drugs.
This is my problem. It's not specific to sometime in the future. It's specific to right now. Well, as he's sitting there, he has a configuration of possession that suggests an intent to deliver it, and he's seated in a moving vehicle that logically facilitates deliveries. Why is that a problem?
Well, under those circumstances, McNulty's conviction should return, because there was an insufficient nexus between McNulty's possession of the drugs, which was a significant amount enough to constitute possession with intent to deliver.
But he wasn't charged with that, was he?
Yes, he was, I believe. Yes, that was overturned. But yet it was overturned in McNulty because the evidence relating to McNulty's exclusive ability to identify the buyer had no relevance to McNulty's knowingly keeping a vehicle. That's at McNulty, 655 Atlantic 2nd at 1219. So there has to be an element of keeping a vehicle or control of the vehicle in order to deliver the drugs at that time.
Well, could a connection be inferred with Boswell, the driver, who had all the cash? Your client had no cash, right?
No.
So if you have, I assume no gun was found on Smith, so my hypothetical isn't right on point, but if could a rational jury infer that your client was possessing the gun or the drugs with intent to deliver, and that Boswell was the cashier, and that this was a rolling sales machine for drugs?
No, that is not a permissible inference. That is speculation. It is just as possible that they were going to Walmart, which is at the foot of Wilton Boulevard, for one of the people in the car to buy a humidifier for the children in their apartment, and our client just happened to have drugs in his pocket.
Well, I understand that. That's a possibility. But now that your client's convicted, and we look at the facts in the light most favorable to the state, is that an inference that can be drawn?
There are no facts that are favorable, says, to the state, other than pure speculation. It is not illegal to possess money in a vehicle. The state didn't have any evidence to establish any type of conspiracy, any type of drug deal, or anything else. And that's all the state is just putting up a hypothetical, says, today, as it did in its briefing. It's just pure speculation, unsupported by any evidence.
Let's go back to McNulty for a minute. McNulty did not involve possession with intent to deliver. Now, whether I'm right or wrong about the significance of possessing with intent to deliver at a particular point in time when you're in a car, McNulty was accused, as I understand it, as I recall it, of an accomplice liability because he was seated in the back seat. Other people in the front seat had cocaine and actually attempted to sell it or deliver it to someone else. He was convicted of possessing the cocaine and possessing only based on an accomplice liability theory. And we reversed the conviction of him maintaining a vehicle because it was also based on accomplice liability. There's no finding in that case that at the moment
that the people in the front seat were attempting to deliver cocaine, that he possessed a sufficient quantity of cocaine that would justify a conviction for intent to deliver. So there was no nexus between his presence in the back seat and the activity in the front seat, at least as you could read the case.
I believe there was a nexus insofar as the drug element, but not the vehicle element. McNulty was an accomplice to the delivery. And delivery is just as serious offense as possession with intent to deliver. In fact, possession with intent to deliver is a lesser included offense, or an included offense of delivery.
You're in the same statute, right?
Yes.
The same,
yes, sir. In Priest, the court observed, again, and I use the court's own language, the critical benchmark for determining the sufficiency of the evidence in maintaining a vehicle prosecution has been the degree of the defendant's control or use of the vehicle in connection with the possession of drugs. That's an element, the degree of control or use of the vehicle. In here, it says there was none. In Priest, there was none. In McNulty, there was none. That's why those convictions were reversed.
Well, what
it takes more.
How about Lonergan, Watson, and Wheeler, where all three defendants were convicted for maintaining a vehicle, and they were all passengers?
They were all passengers. However, in each of those cases, they were accomplices to a drug delivery, which was happening at the time of their arrest. In Lonergan, both the driver and the passenger went to Philadelphia, were co-conspirators in the purchasing of drugs in Philadelphia of a sufficient amount for redistribution. Lonergan actually hid the drugs under the seat of the car. In Watson, the defendant hid the cocaine in the vehicle while his girlfriend went into the motel room to consummate the drug deal. They were using the vehicle to consummate the drug deal, to facilitate the deliveries as of drugs. In Wheeler, the passenger stored marijuana in the car. He actually secreted it in the vehicle. He was on his way to purchase drug paraphernalia, blunt. He admitted he smoked crack in the car 2 or 3 days before his arrest. He fixed the car's rearview mirror, and he had been using the car for several days, all of which is sufficient evidence to infer that he has sufficient control or he's keeping that vehicle, which is absent, as in this case. The court, again, I'd like to emphasize that in Priest, the court said there must be some evidence of some affirmative activity to utilize the vehicle to facilitate the possession or use of the controlled substance. Facilitate is defined in Merriam-Webster's online dictionary as to make it easier, to help bring about. There is nothing about this vehicle that was stopped near Walmart that night in Wilton Boulevard that made it easier for our client to bring about his own possession of marijuana. He would have possessed it when he was in the vehicle or not.
Is it correct that Brown did not contest his possession with intent to deliver charge?
I believe he did contest it, yes. He contested it on the intent element, yes.
He did?
I think so, yeah, at trial. But there, not insofar as evidence. There was one expert who testified for the state. That was it. Now, Justice Ridgely, you brought up as an illustration. I'd like to bring up another as illustration, and I think I have the court to thank us for it. In Priest, when Priest was argued, insofar as that element, that there must be some affirmative activity to use the vehicle to facilitate the possession or use of the controlled substance, I think it was Justice Jacobs who used as an illustration, well, what if the defendant, in our case here, got on a dark bus leaving from Dover to go to Wilmington, and the headlight of the bus was out, and the bus got stopped, and the passengers got searched, and the client had marijuana in his pocket, let's say a significant amount, to establish possession with intent to deliver. Is that sufficient to establish maintaining a vehicle? Well, under the state's argument, it is. And we submit that under this court's prior authority, it is not. And if it wasn't Justice Jacobs, and if it was a member of this panel, I apologize for misattributing it. if the court has if the court
other,
has no other questions,
other
I reserve my
wanted to raise, but that you had raised the issue of whether the state presented legally sufficient evidence or whether the judge erroneously instructed the jury. Do you want to speak to the instruction?
Well, I hadn't intended to address that specifically because that's sort of the mirror image and substance of this argument. Thank you.
Good afternoon. If it pleases the court. I think Mr. O'Donnell and I agree on a great deal. Two main cases seem to be, and the ones that get cited most often, are Lonergan and Priest for the two key issues. One is the purpose mentioned in Lonergan. It should be interpreted broadly to include a single incident, and also the purpose of the statute is to, and I quote, discourage the use of a motor vehicle in the transportation of drugs. And then Priest, where the critical benchmark is the degree of the defendant's control or use of the vehicle in connection with the possession of the drugs. So the degree of control or use, and this is where I think to begin where Mr. O'Donnell left off with the bus analogy. I think it's all agreed that a person who takes public transportation, gets on an airplane to transport drugs, gets on a train to go from New York to Wilmington to bring drugs in, has absolutely no degree of control whatsoever over the destination of those vehicles. In order, thus, a mere passenger in a vehicle, any vehicle, whether it's public transportation or not, who is simply a mere passenger, and there is no other indication that this individual is anything other than a mere passenger, exercising no control whatsoever as a mere passenger, cannot be convicted under this court's jurisprudence of maintaining a vehicle, simply riding. That's why in this case, the key factors are, first of all, that Mr. Brown was convicted not simply of possession, but of possession with the intent to deliver. Inferentially from the fact that he was carrying 22 bags of marijuana, not simply a single baggie for his own personal use, so it was an indication that this trip he was taking with his friends, even though he was a passenger, was a business trip. He was not simply along for the ride, and the fact that the driver, Mr. Boswell, had a rather large amount of cash, I think it was $1,017 in his pocket, also seemed to indicate that there was a business going on here. I realized that Mr. Boswell, for some reason, was not charged at all, or at least he was not indicted. I'm not quite sure if the police charged him or not. But
was that argued at trial that Boswell and Brown were together selling drugs?
I don't believe it was. I don't believe it was. But the fact that Mr. Boswell, and again, I'm not absolutely 100% sure of that, but the fact that Mr. Boswell did have $1,000 in his possession was a fact that was before the jury.
Well, but what was the state's evidence? And what was the argument to the jury to support this conviction?
That Mr. Boswell was Mr. Brown, in fact, was on his way. That this was a business trip. That this was not simply a bunch of guys out for a night on the town, and Mr. Brown just happened to have some drugs on his person.
Well, tell us how. And this is distinguishable from the bus example. You know, if you're on the bus and it's a business trip, you've indicated you're a mere passenger and you wouldn't be guilty. Here, what evidence did the state present that he was not a mere passenger?
Well, it's simply the fact that he had the larger quantity on him, packaged for...
Well, that would be the same if he was riding the bus.
Well, in a case like that, if he were, the inference I suppose I'm making is that, no, if he had the 22 bags and it were somehow established that he had no control whatsoever, he was simply a mere passenger, even though he had the 22 bags, that was an inference that one could not make, that this was a business trip, that he was not in cahoots with the driver. He was not telling the driver where to go, if somehow that could be established.
Well, but my question is, tell us in this case, what evidence did the state present that Brown told the driver where to go? Did someone testify Brown gave the driver instructions?
No, so, none whatsoever.
From that point of view, he's still a mere passenger.
A mere passenger. He could be. That's not impossible under these facts. I mean, the other defendants were not called. The other two individuals were not called to testify.
Give you a hypothetical. We have a person, Brown, with all of these drugs in his pockets, and he's standing at a street corner, and he could get into the dark bus, or he could hitchhike, you know, with another individual.
Right.
In this particular case, you're trying to say getting into Boswell's car is different, and that Brown in this car wasn't a mere passenger. My question is, what facts do you present to distinguish this case from the dark bus case, from the hitchhiker case, and the case we have before us?
Well, in this case, we have, in addition to the, I think, a permissible inference that this was a business trip simply from the 22 bags, we have the money in Mr. Boswell's pocket, and we also have Officer Alfrey's testimony that he questioned these individuals. And they knew each other, so he was not simply a stranger who they picked up. The Boswell Mr. Brown, the defendant, knew each other. They were just a little iffy about the third person who was.
So, are you saying that our holding is you can only be a mere passenger with a stranger?
Well, if it were somehow established that you were a mere hitchhiker, it may be difficult to...
No, but I think when we say being a mere passenger isn't enough, we had to assume you were probably in the car with someone you knew, right?
I would, yes, definitely.
I'm having difficulty understanding how the fact that Brown knew the driver convicts him of maintaining a vehicle.
Well, this would be another... reason or which would allow a reasonable juror under, you know, the critical benchmark in Priest to allow that he did have some control over that Mr. Brown, who had the drugs and was a backseat passenger, did have some control over where this car was going. He was not just going wherever Mr. Boswell happened to be going. If that were the case, if Mr. Boswell were just driving wherever Mr. Boswell happened to be going and Mr. Brown decided, well, yeah, you know, I'm bored, let me go along with you, then, no, he would be like the bus passenger or the train passenger or the airplane passenger. He's just going along wherever this vehicle happens to take him. That would fail the Priest critical benchmark test of some kind of degree of control over the vehicle. Well, there has to be evidence of that, some degree of control over the course and destiny of this vehicle.
So what was that?
From constructive possession of drugs. But I think
Mr. Dunn?
I'm sorry.
What was that evidence of his control over the vehicle?
What is the evidence?
Yes.
Well, just, again, as I have gone over before, the bags of marijuana indication of, and plus the money in Mr. Boswell's pocket, the indication of this was a business trip, and the fact, again, that the two knew each other. I mean, Brown was not simply a stranger they picked up as a hitchhiker. Admittedly, the evidence is somewhat thin, but interestingly enough, in this case, Mr. O'Donnell, in his reply brief, talked about the drugs being in his pocket. The main problem in cases like in which the defendant was found not guilty was connecting the defendant who was charged with maintaining a vehicle with the drugs at all. I mean, that was the problem with Priest.
Let me suggest that turning for just a moment to the instruction that the trial judge gave to the jury is helpful in sorting through this, at least to me. So let me suggest to you that when the trial judge concluded that what the statute really says, rather than the troublesome unlawfully keep or maintain a vehicle phrase, is that a person is guilty of maintaining a vehicle when they use it.
Yes.
For keeping deliveries. Now, under the best possible interpretation of these facts, there's no way the defense could say that a finding that by the jury that he possessed drugs with the intent to deliver them while he was seated in a car, when there are two other people dividing the duties and you have a state expert say that it's commonly done in drug deliveries to have a group enterprise, it's very difficult to say that he wasn't using the vehicle. But the real question is that the proper way to read the statute? The way the statute reads is you unlawfully keep or maintain a vehicle, which raises the control issue that you've been focused on. Then it says, having us in effect, I read it to say, we've established that there are facts that show that you have the vehicle under some form of control. You're keeping it or maintaining it. And it's used for delivering drugs, keeping drugs, or maintaining controlled substances. So it's like a two-step process. The trial judge seemed to suggest it isn't at all. It's a one-step process. As long as you're in that car and you're using it for the purpose of delivering drugs, you're guilty of maintaining a vehicle. Now, how did the trial judge get there?
Through the case law, Your Honor. I think if we were writing on a clean slate here, and I think that keep or maintain, those are the operative words. That's what you have to do. You have to keep or you have to maintain.
Well, and the trial judge really said, if you just use it, that's maintaining it.
That's
how the trial judge defined the word maintain. Just use it.
Just use. And that goes back to, I think, as far back as Lonergan, where that keep or maintain also begins to include the word use. And that's been kept in the statute. Now, writing it on a clean slate here, it would be a person. Well, in this particular case, again, strictly looking at the statute, the one who should have been charged with keeping or maintaining was Boswell, the driver, the owner.
Unfortunately, Brown was convicted.
Brown was, because Brown was also using the car. But if one is strictly reading that keep or maintain, Brown wasn't doing any keeping or maintaining. All Brown was doing was using the car. He may have been using the car, and he may have been in cahoots with Boswell, but he certainly wasn't keeping or maintaining. There was no evidence that he, paid for the maintenance of the car.
I'm not sure what strictly reading the statute means. I think I like to try to read statutes for its plain meaning, for what it says. And I'm having difficulty concluding that when we are supposed to analyze these cases from the perspective of control, in order to determine whether somebody's keeping or maintaining a vehicle, how does mere use of it constitute maintaining it? Because if you take the trial judge's instruction on the law, then the person who's jumped on the DART bus with 22 bags of marijuana in their pocket, and there's a basis to believe that they possess with intent to deliver, is certainly using that bus to go from Dover to Wilmington while having the intent to deliver drugs. So that's maintaining a vehicle under this trial judge's interpretation.
Yeah. The trial judge was looking then at the case law where that use keeps on popping up,
Mr. Donovan, this instruction that the trial judge gave was a variation on the standard instruction, wasn't it?
Which is, the variation on the, which is read the language of the statute, which is the...
Right. So inserting the word use the way the trial judge in the instruction was novel.
I'm sorry, it was...
Novel. This was a, this instruction hasn't been given before, has it?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, the judge, again, said, well, I looked at, I think she's looking at Priest and Wheeler. And so based on, you know, looking at these statutes, I think that the prosecutor asked for it, wanted the word use added to it, and said, yeah, well, based on my reading of these cases, yes, I will add use into it. And
hypothetically, let's say you've got boyfriend, drug dealer, uses the car to sell drugs every day. Girlfriend, honey, I want to go get a gallon of milk. Takes that same car to get a gallon of milk. Is she guilty under this statute?
The girlfriend is guilty under the statute if she knowingly allows boyfriend to use her car.
No, it's the boyfriend's car. If she uses the car to go get a gallon of milk, is she guilty under this statute?
Well, no, she's not keeping or maintaining the car.
Is she guilty under this instruction?
Well, no, to go get the milk.
Because she used the vehicle.
No, there's no, maybe I'm missing part of the hypothetical. There's no drugs in the car.
You're not missing anything. The question is suggesting that the trial judge's instruction is so illogical that even under the fact situation that Justice Ridgely posed to you, the girlfriend would be guilty of using a car that was kept maintained for the purpose of delivering drugs.
Using a car that was at some point in the past used.
Or even on a concurrent or ongoing basis.
No.
I think that's the point of the question, and that's why this instruction is bizarre at best.
Well, looking at the judge's reasoning and based on the cases that she was looking at, that word use does pop up again and again and again. Going back to Lonergan, where the primary purpose of the statute is to prohibit the use, not the keeping or the maintaining, but the use of motor vehicles for this purpose. Now,
the essence of this instruction is to say that using a vehicle is synonymous with maintaining a vehicle for the purpose of delivering drugs. If you read the instruction, it says, and I'm ellipsizing it, a person is guilty of maintaining a vehicle when he maintains any vehicle which is resorted to by persons using, keeping, or delivering controlled substances. How helpful is that to a jury? You're guilty of maintaining a vehicle when you maintain a vehicle.
The terms aren't defined. Keep or maintain are not defined whatsoever.
She defines it as maintaining means using it.
If maintain means using, then the judge's instruction was correct.
Okay, I would flip it the other way around and say if the judge says maintain means simply using it, that completely eliminates the element of control as an issue, and it's an incorrect statement of what keeps or maintains was intended to mean by the statute.
Well, then certainly the gloss on that, how it should go in any instruction, would be the critical benchmark mentioned in Priest. That should be part of any maintaining a vehicle instruction. So that is the critical, you know, decision here, is whether or not the defendant has exercised the requisite degree of control or use over the vehicle. Judge Johnson said, you know, I find the statute very confusing, and it's probably not the best one on the books. Anybody who keeps or maintains is a person who keeps or maintains.
Well, it's not unusual to find that there's a way of rewriting a statute so it's simpler, but the purpose of statutory construction is not to make the statute simpler. It's to convey the intent of the legislature. And in interpreting the case law that speaks to the statute, you can't write out keeping and maintaining as a basis for determining the extent to which someone controls the vehicle and simply say using it is good enough because that's the better, easier way of understanding the statute. It makes more sense. But you can't rewrite a statute like that, can you?
No, definitely not.
If we took her logic and given this instruction, then the person who hops on the bus is using the bus for the purpose of facilitating the delivery of drugs. And therefore, under her definition, when she equates using with maintaining, they've maintained the bus as the vehicle and can be convicted by riding on the bus. Now, I don't think there's any body that believes that's what the statute intended to happen. You just said that earlier yourself.
No, I certainly have no argument.
Well, what do we do about it then under these circumstances? Is this instruction clearly erroneous, or apparently the trial lawyer just said, all right, I'm sorry, I raised the issue, and they moved on?
Yeah, there was really no objection to it.
Well, he objected to the instruction,
actually,
but
then he
gave up at the end. But I think it's enough to preserve it for appeal. So what do we do about it?
Well, if the court believes that this allowed the jury to find the defendant guilty without finding the critical benchmark, as mentioned in Priest, that the requisite degree of control or use of the car, then the jury's verdict should be reversed.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I hope I didn't mishear him, but I think Mr. Donovan said in his presentation that, or conceded that, quote, simply riding in a vehicle is not an offense while you're in possession of drugs. And I'd like to reemphasize that this case, the state's evidence only shows that the defendant was, quote, simply riding, as the state characterized.
What was the relevant of the cash that Boswell had?
It has no relevance. It is not illegal, says, for another person to have cash in a vehicle. There is no evidence that our client was even aware that Mr. Boswell had legally possessed cash. If
there was no objection on relevance grounds to the cash.
There was no objection on relevance grounds, but that doesn't mean it's permissible to infer that which cannot be inferred rationally and logically.
Mr. Now, O'Donnell, if the instruction is wrong because it says you define the word keeper maintained simply by determining that an individual used a vehicle, doesn't that end it?
It does, insofar as a reversal being says required. However, if the state nonetheless presents insufficient evidence to obtain a conviction, even under a correct instruction on the law, that is nonetheless an acquittal based upon insufficient evidence, and the defendant cannot be retried for that reason.
Well, what if the proposition to you were that this instruction is incorrect as a matter of law because it, in effect, minimizes the significance of the words keeps or maintains and improperly takes the word uses and substitutes that word for the meaning of keep and maintain. Therefore, the jury was misled and the judgment has to be reversed. Why do you care that we might differ with you on whether the facts themselves, absent that instruction, might justify a conviction otherwise?
Why do I care? Yeah. It is because my client should not be subjected to another trial when there was insufficient evidence to convict him of the offense at the first trial.
Okay.
Secondly, the state keeps inferring that and claiming that this was a business trip, trying to raise the specter of they were out there selling as drugs, just like three individuals who look like this who happen to have an inoperable headlight. Well, they're selling drugs, and because somebody has cash and because somebody has drugs, absent any other evidence, this is a drug deal. You know, the state keeps claiming that this was a drug deal. This was a drug deal going down, and Boswell is the one who should have been convicted of maintaining a vehicle for the purposes of keeping or possessing marijuana. But the state didn't charge him, says, with that. The state didn't charge Boswell with any drug offense. The state didn't have the audacity to present that fact situation to a Superior Court judge who would have reviewed it on a sufficiency of the evidence standard vis-a-vis Mr. Boswell. I'm mystified that they'd argue it here this morning.
But we don't know why they didn't charge, do we?
I haven't noticed any, says, lack of temerity on a part of a prosecutor, says, in prosecuting a case where there was any possible, says, way to get it by a Superior Court judge. Absent, says, that's just the way I see it. I mean, if there was sufficient evidence enough to argue here this morning, charge the man. There wasn't sufficient evidence to convict Boswell of anything to do with drugs, and any prosecutor would have recognized that. That's why it was probably pled out to a headlight violation or something like that in the Court of Common Pleas. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Take the case under advisement and adjourn.